This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not reflect those of other podcasts or affiliates of the show. We're Gunna Geek. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. Get ready because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news rumors as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 148 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we tinker with the laws of time using questionable vehicular choices and decide that any lasting impact on the space-time continuum is completely acceptable, as long as it works out for our good-looking, youthful protagonist. Take that, Razzlon. I'm your host, Haley, and with me today in the GPR studios, we have Jay. How are you today, Jay?
I am doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing pretty great. How about you, Keir?
Oh, yeah, me. I'm feeling good, too. Well, this week we're going to have a little bit of fun with our format and take a look at the premise of time travel as it gets addressed in the 1985 to 1990 span of sci-fi action comedy movies, the trilogy Back to the Future. Specifically, we want to take a look at the methods of temporal manipulation being used, as well as the kind of theories about alternate timelines and the repercussions that are dealt with by our primary characters. And of course, because this is GPR, we're going to be stacking these against the many, 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 many ways that these same topics get handled over the course of Doctor Who's run.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is one of those topics that's just, it's a lot of fun for Whovians to tear into and really start to, you know, tear the show apart, basically, because that's what we love to do. We're Whovians.
Us? No.
Well, sci-fi geeks in any nature. We love finding that balance between the credible and the incredible.
Yeah, Whovians just take it to the next level.
because we've had decades of practice.
You know, one of the great comparisons I heard recently, and this has nothing to do with anything, but Whovians will take any excuse to think that the show is completely and utterly doomed, you know, regardless of whatever circumstances there are. Whereas you take, on the other side of the coin, like Star Wars fans, who despite any evidence shown before them, they always expect the best. It's one of those interesting dichotomies that I've noticed. And being a fan of both of them, I'm like, yeah, no, I don't understand how I can do that because I do both.
Pessimistic offenders. I'm in it till the death, and that death is going to be really soon, but I just want to let you know we're all going to die, but I'm here for you for the next 25 seconds. Well, how do we even begin with this? Because we'll sit down a little bit of ground rules here. We are going to be discussing all three of the films.
Okay, yeah, we can.
Yeah, I think we have to.
Yeah, I mean, they really were built as a trilogy, so it's kind of hard to take just one out of it.
Mm. Okay, and other kind of basic principles here is that as we mentioned at the outset, we're going to be looking at the how as well as the what ifs or, you know, the repercussions. So the means of how they got a little bit of their timey-wimey-ness going on, and then how they dealt with the fallout as it was structured. And I think that's one of the reasons why I think we kind of really had to look at the trilogy, because some of the real fun that they had with the alternate timeline, the manipulation of time stream, happened as you start seeing the second and third layers wrapped around that core of the 85 to 55 adventure.
Right, yeah. And I mean, that's kind of where a lot of what we want to discuss tonight really comes into play, is the repercussions of time travel. Yeah, we've, in this one in particular, we see that time is not a fixed thing. You can manipulate and change, and everything is in flux. Yeah, that, no pun intended.
Yeah. I was totally. That's how it worked.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the way that it works, is that, you know, it's anything you do can and will impact everything else, and you can come back to a very different outcome than what was previously established. So it's,
and as long as it works out in your favor, just take it.
Yeah, well, as long as it works out in the McFly's favor, because that's the ultimate goal here. But
no one ever talks about the next door neighbors that are just watching all this stuff change around them. Well, why don't we start with how we get into this mess in the first place?
Okay.
So what are the mechanics and the means that we are told, to a very limited extent, that we are capable of doing time travel in the place?
Well, that would be the flux capacitor.
Okay, right. But how?
Which is powered by stolen plutonium that we got from the Libyans.
Until you can figure out how to, you know, recycle banana peels into a nuclear power source. Yeah.
So essentially, it's creating a fusion reaction within
that somehow, which does channels, a thing.
Right. Well, it channels a very specific amount of energy.
1.21 gigawatts.
Yes, because they get jiggy, and channels that into some sort of a moving contrivance that has to be traveling at 88 miles per hour. In order to break the space-time fabric.
Because the laws of time are definitely in the imperial system and not metric.
Right. Correct.
Well, it converts.
To something.
Which none of us know, because we don't do that kind of thing.
All right. Canadians, get on this. Convert this over to kilohectares or whatever it is you guys are, cubits. Let us know what we're dealing
with. Okay, it's 141.622 kilometers per hour.
It's probably a very big number somewhere. It probably doesn't do well in subtitles in certain languages where they actually are using the metric system to make conversion. I don't know why.
Christopher Lloyd just stopped after like the second decimal point, and he's like, I'm not, we're just going 88 miles an hour.
What is this, pie? So, all right. Well, the parallel that I'm seeing here is that with so many science fiction premises post H.G. Wells, we're dealing with something where the time travel is facilitated as a result of technology. Whether we're dealing with a slingshot around the sun, whether we're dealing with the harnessing the power of a collapsing sun at the center of your time machine, or any other variation, it's the tech that's allowing this to happen, whether it's a known or something that happens accidentally and propels someone, what have you. So I'm trying to think of examples that used to be prior to that, and the only example I was coming up was something as well-known examples was a Connecticut Yankee English court where bonk in the head.
Yeah.
You wake from a dream state or float down a river and suddenly...
I can think of a fuse where it's like a magic MacGuffin that sends it back. As opposed to some technological thing?
Yeah, it really wasn't until the time machine where it became a mechanical apparatus that did the work. It was always more of a mystical, nebulous kind of ethereal thing that just happened to work out that way.
And I think as far as the degree or lack of degree of explanation is hits just the perfect balance within these movies, because they're not meant to be taken as any kind of hard science whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But as we'll get to in a second, they did put a lot of thought into the ripple effects. So while they didn't want to belabor the point on how the flux capacitor do the who do it do, it's more interesting to watch the fallout.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really what it's about. It's not, how does this happen? It's, okay, what happens because of this? And that's where the story really does get interesting.
And Doc Brown explains it all with a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And a bandage on his head. The reason why I bring that up is because I think there are times where we as Whovians will be watching an episode or a particular series arc where they're trying to find that particular writer or that writing team for that moment is trying to find the balance between the science fiction entertainment factor and that explanation factor. and we talk about this often, about, you know, giving us too much of your pseudoscience. You know, we're happy at this one particular crux of saying, all right, give us just enough so that we can say, all right, you know, you put a little premise behind this. I see where you're going to get us there. Now we're there. Let's not worry about how it functioned. Let's move on with this adventure. Mm-hmm. So it's a good example of seeing how a particular writing team for these scripts gave us, in my estimation, a nice, just enough, get the ball rolling. Now let's watch where the path goes.
Yeah, and it really is that perfect balance, too, because you never, well, I don't want to say never, but, you know, very seldom, I guess, you come across someone who really gets hung up on the science or about it, or say, oh, there wasn't enough explanation, or, you know, they overdid this part. Everyone can kind of accept that, you know, this is, okay, flux capacitor, 88 miles an hour, we're at a different spot or whatever, so let's just go with it. And it is acceptable because we've got something that sounds sciencey, and, you know, we're good with that, and then it doesn't get bogged down in it, so it's really is that perfect blend, which is hard to do, because it's one of those things that you think of any other time travel thing, you know, you always want to know just a little bit more, but okay, but how did they get there? Or it's, you know, you get, you know, what was it, Timeline by Michael Crichton, I think, that, you know, you're just, okay, wait, parallel universe, and they're, how does it overlap? And I don't know. And, you know, you spend a chapter and a half on stuff that you just don't understand. You're like, can we just get back to the medieval stuff, please?
Well, all right.
Crichton does that a lot.
yeah, Sphere. Anyway, But now through whatever mechanism gets you there, now you're at the point where you're actually doing some time, either controlled or uncontrolled. In the first case, you know, we see, you know, the testing, you know, going on there in the parking lot, and putting Einstein behind the wheel, and just seeing the results from the stationary observer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we've got the fact that Einstein's there 1 minute, you know, the synchronized clocks, he's gone for 60 seconds observed time, and when he comes back, the clocks are exactly a minute of sync.
Right.
Yep.
So
can I just point out, Doc Brown had a remote control car before the Mythbusters made it cool.
Very true.
That's where they got the idea.
hence, he made it cool, and the Mythbusters just copied.
Well, yeah.
So, this idea of dealing with these gaps in existence is actually one of the things I saw as an interesting kind of criticism against not only against Back to the Future, but instances where this has happened with Doctor as well. And so the fact that if Marty disappears from 1985, especially if Marty and his girlfriend disappear from 1985 for any periods where they're traveling forward back, they have rendered themselves within that timeline unable to have their own children in 2015 because they are out of existence during that period. Just like Einstein's out of existence for the minute he was gone in the car. So you get to play with that one for a little while. That's a nice little mind.
I think as long as they don't die before they come back, it's fine.
Yeah, you're dealing with any of those instances where you're saying, and this is going to get us to a great point where actual factual science gets involved, and that's the premise of, well, as long as you correct things, you know, as long as things have an opportunity to set themselves right, then you can continue and take all these outlandish chances because it's the I'm going to fix this when we get back principle.
We have to. Oh, that's next week. We have to remember.
Yeah, don't jump ahead.
See, okay. This one to me seems more along the lines of like it's all alternate dimensions basically, or alternate timelines. Where
okay. See from. Well, go ahead and finish.
Well, I mean, like Kira was saying, it was, you know, you're basically taken out of that timeline. You know, from the moment you travel, you cease to exist in that timeline, and you jump to another one that has already progressed. At a certain point, like, you know, you're just basically taking the place of yourself in that timeline instead.
Right.
So it's less a matter of, you know, of how things have played out up to that point or what you do while you're there or anything like that, because it's not, you know, it's not Clara Prime, basically.
Right. You're essentially writing off the reality that you just left and putting yourself in another one where everything works out the way you wanted, but you're not even paying attention to the fact that you have since left an existence or a version of reality where things were going awry and you popped out.
Yeah.
as far as your observation, you picked up the needle at one point in the record and dropped it on the other, but you're on an entirely different record at that point.
Yeah.
And the one you were on has spun off against the wall.
I mean, it's like that book Timeline that I mentioned where it's, okay, no, we put you in the machine and it vaporizes you, and then you know, another dimension that's exactly like ours, except they figured out how to put you back together on the other side. That's where you pop up. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it works out here.
Well, yeah. That's take one about the idea of spidering off into an infinite number of alternate timelines or actual alternate realities as a result of each decision that you make. Mm-hmm. You could argue that happens regardless of whether it's time travel at all. Every time you decide to turn or left, you're setting things in motion. And that somewhere there is an alternate of where you made the flip side of that choice.
Right.
What they end up doing at the same time is they pay a lot of lip service within Back to the Future of the islands in the stream analogy, that no matter what you drop in there to muck about with time, and Haley mentioned this at the beginning, the no fixed points, history can be written kind of thing, but history wants to correct itself in certain, if you take that approach, that theoretical stance, the history wants to correct itself like the water channeling itself around an obstruction in the stream to come back to where it began, and that connects very clearly with the way a lot of classic Who was. And still does from time to time. The Doc comes out and talks about, well, he, she, or this moment is a fixed point in time. Well, until we mess with it.
Yeah. Until the script determines that it needs to be different.
Okay. Well, there was... Haley, you had a point you wanted to toss into this?
Right. So there's the point where, they jump ahead, but when Marty goes back and he messes up his parents' meeting, I feel like that part kind of is the least scientifically accurate for science that we don't understand of anything. He should have either blinked out of existence or nothing should have happened to the picture.
Right. Mm. It was, the whole starting to fade slowly as things became worse and worse. It's like, well, that there should have been a direct correlation one-to-one about, cause and outcome instead of, a slow burn kind of thing that doesn't, like you said, it's the least scientific because it makes no sense when you actually try and apply logic to it, but it makes for a very dramatic ending to the movie, so
right.
We look over it.
And a killer guitar solo.
Exactly. I love the fact that they were saying that Marty was so out of place in when he put himself in from 85 into 55 that the Marty from 2015, looking back or being seen through the eyes of his 85 self, should be so foreign, so off the charts that it should be something like, he's wandering around doing Eminem rap videos and whatnot, that kind of a culture shock instead of just plastic ties and fax machine.
Well, couldn't he have just gone up and talked to his future self? Because his future self has traveled in time as well.
But that's getting you all into the muckety muck of the do not cross your own timeline, do not come into contact with yourself, and everything involving, wait for it, the Novikov self-consistency principle. Actual science, sort of. What's a principle? Which makes it theoretical, because you can't really write laws about time travel yet. So, but the whole premise that just like nature abhors a vacuum, the premise is that the progression of time so despises the idea of a paradox because of the effect that it has not only forward in time but backward across even potentially multiple existences, because it's one of these kind of where it would tear apart the fabric of reality when you hear that threat thrown around there. That whole idea is that because of the fact that that is so catastrophic, that the actual progression of time, whether it's linear, cyclical, however you want to draw it out, wobbly stuff, actually will keep the causal ratio of that event, of whatever that horrible event happening, to be absolute zero. So it actually keeps you from being able to do anything that's going to have the catastrophic events. They address this in Doctor Who with the limitation technology that they introduced way back in Terrence Dix wrote it into a Second Doctor episode when he was introducing the heck was that thing called? Oh, the Blinovich limitation effect, which was a device that they said helped cover for the fact that the Time Lords were doing a lot of muckety-muck around with the laws of time that they themselves had written. So the whole idea is that, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Star Trek does the same thing. They have a device that's incorporated to allow their warp travel that actually takes into effect the bending or the relative observation of time as you get closer and closer to speed of light, but warp travel transcends.
Right.
So they actually have to account for that, and they wrote tech in to deal with that. The Marty fading out of time thing, they admitted at one point that they said this was something that they said, well, it could be something where, you know, ripples in the time stream there take time to smooth out.
Yeah.
You either dude it or you didn't dude it.
Right.
So I'm totally in agreement with you on that hand.
Okay.
That's kind of along the lines of, I don't know if either of you ever saw that movie Frequency, where the main character is able to talk to his deceased father over a ham radio or something.
Yes.
But I remember there was one part where the dad was in the past and trying to get a hold of his son, and you know, started carving into the desk the words like "I'm here" or something like that. Mm. And then the son sits down and he's watching these words appear in real time. And I'm like, that's not at all how this would work.
That's not how any of this works.
Yeah, he would have scratched it out and then looked down. Right. And his son said, "Hey, I never noticed that word was carved there before. That's already been completed and is now, you know, 50 years aged into the wood."
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of those things. I'm just like, does nobody understand how time actually works here?
Well, you could get into the whole way of treating Interstellar as well, and having things that can see things, you know, four-dimensionally. But as far as Whovian's still playing with, we still started toying with it when we got into New Who, because in Father's Day there was the whole concern, and this happens a lot. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of warnings about you can't go back and do it again. Because Donna Noble says in a number of episodes, well, okay, well, we screwed up or it didn't work out. Let's go back and try it again.
Right.
No, you can't do that. And in Father's Day, they actually discuss these Reapers going back to look for potential tears or issues within the space-time fabric. And they go out and do the eradication to those from actually developing blown paradox in that instance. So we've toyed with a lot of different takes there. I think the concern about Marty kissing his mom's even weirder. I don't know.
I can't think of a time in Doctor Who where, you know, somebody actually went back and made out with their own ancestors, but the Doctor did make out with Amy and her daughter. It's kind of close.
Yeah.
And just remember, incest is the game that only families can play.
That's right. Well, how do we deal with, because when speaking of Amy, when we're talking about things in the timeline that are happening right in front of your eyes, like Marty fading out of the picture or the changes to the newspaper or the changes to the facts that come through, Marty McFly arrested, Marty McFly honored, you know, right. And so forth. We had this in New Who as well, in Angels Take Manhattan. When Amy gets Angel zapped back away from Rory, one more time, you see her gravestone change to the observers there in the moment. They look at it at one point, they look away, they look at it again, point, and it has changed there and then.
Well, we could say that that's the TARDIS and it's the people traveling and existing outside of the time stream. Hand-wavy explanation.
Mm.
See, it's been a little bit since I watched that, but I thought that it was always one of those things that it was just...
We never got a good look at it.
Yeah, you never saw the bottom half of the gravestone. It always, like, the bottom of the frame was always just under Rory's name. So it could be one of those things, like, it was there the entire time, but nobody noticed it because, you know, whatever hand-wavy reason you want to throw at it.
Right. Well, because once you read something about the future, it's fixed.
Yeah, now apparently, because there's been plenty of times that should have played into things. But no, we're going to go ahead and throw it in now.
Like believing the Doctor back into existence? Because he should have been at the wedding? Well, I think as far as these points, we actually had some pretty good feedback that helps us kind of build on these, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we reached out and Badger actually wrote in and said that in the Back to the Future universe that paradoxes seem to be more self-correcting than they would be in Doctor Who, such as Marty slowly disappearing as his parents seemed less likely to get together. You know, in Doctor Who, they tend to break the universe unless the Time Lords actively fix things.
So, yeah, the paradoxes actually start to, in certain instances, erupt.
Like the wedding of River Song.
Correct.
Right, yeah.
Or Rose going back to save her father a second time, that kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, and it's not always the Time Lords too. It's any of the, we run into instances where there's other species or other races that have these temporal these temporal tech or temporal laws or temporal abilities that have to go around policing. I think in Who, though, the fact that they've actually developed the Celestial Intervention Agency just takes it to the nth degree, because now it's something where they're so aware of the risks and pitfalls that they have to start monitoring everyone and get really, really nosy about and start mucking around with things as preventative measures. And they start taking these, it's kind of the kill Hitler principle to a certain degree in some of the stunts that they try to pull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how they, you know, it's such a huge deal in some stories and then others gets ignored completely just because, well, that would get in the way of the story we're trying to tell. And I think that's basically the gist of it right there, is it's how much would this impede the ability to tell an interesting story?
Right. And I think that's probably something that it because of the fact that you've had so many stories told, so many different hands at the writing desk to play around with it and work out some theories or some bits of interest or their particular take on it, that if you were to have something like if Back to the Future were a series that ran for even just a matter of a couple of seasons, you'd probably start to see the same sort of doubling back or rethinking the way they're going to handle some of these situations simply for the sake of making entertainment. Yeah. So you're not just telling the same tale.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the thing, is when you introduce laws of time or something like that, it strictly limits the kind of stuff that you can do, because, you know, there's a really interesting story that I want to tell here, but it flies in the face of, you know, this that we established 2 weeks ago, which is kind of contradictory to the one that we established 5 weeks ago. And, you know, it's basically laws of physics at that point. You have to be able to sit down and work every little detail out, and then it's going to strictly limit what happens. So,
right.
But then Badger went on to write and said, also, the TARDIS exists outside of time, so the ramifications of changes to the time stream don't appear to directly affect the time traveler, unlike the flux capacitor version.
Right.
So,
well, that's going back to exactly what Haley was saying about there might be some sort of preventative or protective element of the TARDIS. But that's... Right. That's, well, how far does that extend? Can I walk 50 feet past it? Do I have to measure it in meters because it's a British-speaking device?
Well, I figured it was like, with the translation thing, it was a connection to the TARDIS more than some physical distance.
Yeah, but then you also have stuff like the crack in Amy's wall that, you know, can suck Rory out of existence and Amy forgets him entirely, but the Doctor still remembers him because you didn't really know him well. Because
the Doctor's a Time Lord.
Yeah, so
it's... And Amy's just a traveler. Hand wavy.
Yeah. So then Badger went on to finish his thought and said, on the other hand, 1.21 gigawatts, I'm saying it correctly, damn it.
It's a different unit.
Is much easier to produce than harnessing.
It's less funky.
1.21 gigawatts is much easier to produce than harnessing the power of a dying star. One has to wonder, though, did Rassilon fall off the toilet and hit his head before inventing the TARDIS?
Probably.
And because I know how much Keir loves list articles, I found a list article on BuzzFeed. 11 things that can actually make 1.21 gigawatts of power.
Go ahead, run through it. I want to see how far we go before it breaks. Now.
We won't know because we can't see the blood coming out of his nose over the internet.
I smell ghost.
In case you were wondering, 8,066,666,670 spinning hamster wheels could have powered the
DeLorean. Oh, man, I only need like three more. I've got the rest in my closet.
Doc Brown is the worst Time Lord. Like, 1950s Doc Brown seems to care a little bit about not messing up the time stream too much, but 80s Doc Brown doesn't care at all.
Well, I was going to throw it away, but then I figured, what the hell?
Well, and then 30 years right of being, you know, on the fringe of society.
Hey, Marty, let's go muck around with the timeline again because your kids are kind of crappy. Yeah. And then he goes way back in time and he cares again about not messing up the time stream.
Yes.
Well, because he met a girl.
Right.
But he apparently was unable to actually learn how to distill gasoline. With all of his knowledge, he couldn't just make gas.
No. He could build a refrigerator that gave you like brown ice. But
if only he knew where you could strike for oil.
No.
Man, if he had some way of knowing the future, jeez.
I'm trying to remember. Didn't one of those articles at the very beginning of the first movie say that their family fortune came from oil?
I think so. Yeah. Boy, are these fun movies or what?
We really should like just watch these one time just for the sole purpose of tearing them apart, like nitpicking it like we do with Doctor Who.
Like we're doing right now?
Okay. See, I only rewatched like the first hour of the first one because I've seen them enough that I could talk about them without rewatching all of it. Mm-hmm. And still, I could nitpick it. Good thing I didn't watch all of it or I'd just be tearing it apart.
Mad dog. And how did ZZ Top get back there? Damn it.
No, that was their ancestors. That was actually like, you know, FF Top.
Oh.
Wow, right. That was a horrible pun.
I'm just going to let it
go ahead and cut that part out. We won't say anything.
Nope, it's staying in. That guy sounds like a jerk. Oh, wait. So, all in all, I think that, you know, this is, I mean, we've definitely seen instances of time travel handled the same way that it is in Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be the least convincing way of representing what's going on. It's more along the lines of, we want to tell this story, so we're bending things to fit what we need to in order to be able to, you know, tell the story we want. Mm-hmm. It's not one of those. It's really like, this is what would happen if we were in this situation. It's not meant to portray the seriousness of time travel. It's just meant to, you know, serve as a vehicle.
Right.
Well, in Back to the Future, it does actually let you change time. I can't really think of a time when Doctor Who has changed time in any significant way.
No, not that we've seen. Like, I guess it's one of those things. Well, Kill the Moon. You know, you have the Earth makes its decision, and then the Doctor kind of remembers how it plays out. But it's not one of those things where we see, oh, this is how it was, let's go back and alter it, and now we see it. That's the closest that I can think to seeing
Waters of Mars. I guess they kind of changed it. And
also the manipulation of the lunar landing so as to insert the warning against the silence.
How do we know it didn't always happen that way? We wouldn't remember.
I know. I've got like 5 dead silence in my corner. I just keep forgetting to clean them off every time I turn around.
Did you see that wonderful, wonderful statement that went on?
Yes.
That went around last week or so about, I'm sure it was actually posted. I think it was a Tumblr statement there somewhere. But somebody had said something where, hold on, this whole idea of killing the silence on site would mean that there would be dead silence laying all over the place. And someone replied and said, anytime you're walking down the street and you trip over something and look back and you can't see nothing. Anything you just tripped over, it was a dead silence you just tripped over. Mm.
Yeah. But I mean, it is one of those things that we've seen on occasion, but it's never one of those things that's really heavily relied on.
No, because I think there's at that point where they really started getting into that degree of time manipulation, they were also, they had a good premise established for the laws that were being adhered to and thinking about the continuity concern of the show. As the show got longer and longer in the years, the concerns over continuity became a little more prevalent. They're still not handled completely perfectly, but I think writers are a little more adept at realizing that they have taken their character and popped around time and space so far in so many directions that you've got to tread kind of careful when you start inserting new potential adjustments.
Right.
Clean up on your way out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been kind of fun going back and looking at this and seeing, you know, actually discussing how it kind of works out. Because, I mean, we don't get to see time travel that much in Doctor Who anymore. Not to the extent of how does it actually affect things. It's mostly just like, hey, we're going to have a medieval piece. So we go back into the medieval times and then the TARDIS sits there as a decoration.
Right, the TARDIS is a vehicle to get us to whatever story they want to tell.
Exactly.
It doesn't really have any consequence to it.
Yeah, I mean, the last time I can remember it actually doing anything remotely close to what we're talking about is in Hyde, where it's like, okay, yeah, jump forward a couple thousand years every time and take a really slow flipbook approach kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the most recent time where it's been like, oh yeah, it's a time machine. I forgot about that.
Well, where are we gonna proceed from here?
Well, this is the one that I'm actually kind of excited about, just because I always thought it was a lot more fun, a lot more fun way of dealing with time travel. But next week we're going to talk about Bill and Ted's and how you have a seemingly fixed timeline that you can manipulate, but it still seems fixed. It's
to the traveler or to the observer seeing the individuals come and go.
Well, guys, this is next week's conversation.
You just have to wait until next week and find out.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that are we going to be just dealing with Excellent Adventure, or are we going to take Bogus Journey in there too?
Bogus Journey wasn't very much time travel, though. That was afterlife and distant places. And
true.
So I was.
But I'll probably watch it this weekend, anyways.
Well, right. Yeah, because
the Reaper. Get down with your bad selves.
Yeah. Station.
Yes, we got to get our station on and our evil robot uses. Anyway, before we drift too far.
All right, you guys ready to jump into some news?
Yeah, we got lots.
All right, so what's our first bit of news that we've got on the board tonight?
Well, this is just a sort of a pin to drop in on our earlier conversation interview with Paul Cornell. As we mentioned, we spoke with him that his two upcoming productions, This Damn Band and Four Doctors, are both now available at comic shops if you did not have advance pre-order. So This Damn Band on Dark Horse and Titan Comics has the Four Doctors. Reviews are already starting to come out for Four Doctors, and they are extremely favorable, particularly noting the fact that when you're trying to convey the differences in the personalities of these actors, you know, as we've come to associate them, their iterations of the Doctor, and doing so not only just in written format, but in comic written format, and that leaves you particularly limited, that he's done an excellent job of being able to capture Capaldi's persona and Smith persona and so forth. So definitely worth your dollars spent if you have not already. Go spend.
Yes, absolutely. I've actually got them sitting on my iPad waiting to be read. I've just not had time.
Yes, sir.
I have looked through, and the artwork looks amazing, which doesn't say anything about Paul Cornell's portion of it, but still, it's really awesome.
I have a bunch of comics to read.
So. Shocker.
Have you made it to 72 yet?
I think so.
Wow, progress.
And time trudges inexorably. And just one other thing to button in here as far as releases to keep my love, because we had mentioned earlier, Big Finish now has finally put out the Sixth Doctor Last Adventure, waiting for to get that transition point, Colin Baker's Old Sixie, and heading into Sylvester McCoy's Seventh. By the way, they have also released the Trial of Valyard, or re-released Trial of the Valyard, which was a little thing they did back in 2013, a little episode that actually picks up right after Trial of the Time Lord and going after punishing the Valyard, his crime, so to speak. So it's a nice little thing to have along with it, because it transitions really beautifully between them and gives you a nice completion to the Sixth Doctor's tale.
Awesome. I'll have to put that on right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. All right. So then the next bit of news that we have is, so to kind of tie into the story we had last week about Russell T. Davies and David Tennant absolutely being involved in an episode of Doctor Who this coming season, and no one can tell me differently, apparently Georgia Moffat decided to come down to Cardiff as well. And I don't know how to tie this one into my theory, so I'm just going to leave it there.
Well, you know, it's the right people, right time, right place. She happened to pop into the TARDIS set to take it with Peter. She was in her civvies. He was in costume, so
right.
Was how like do you know that's prepping. Not her costume?
I don't. But, you know, let the rumor mills fly, because it's a fun thing. You know, there's all sorts of suspicions that they're going to be in the finale. It's nice to hope. Hope is awesome. It's great on toast. As far as other things for the next season, maybe not season or series 9. This may be something that works its way in supplementally or later in the fact. Guess who misses being on Doctor Who?
Everybody. Oh wait.
Samuel Anderson really wants to put some pink back in the TARDIS in any fashion he can, whether it's Danny, Orson, anything. It was probably the taste of glory that he has. He's itching to have, and he's even trying to. He's got a pitch he wants to throw at Stephen Moffat. He's trying to get Twitter hashtag campaign going and really rip this up. So if you're a Pinky or a Pinkerton, no, that's probably a thing. Don't be a Pinkerton. Historic, that's bad. But if you're a Pinky, jump on that hashtag bandwagon.
I'm going to go ahead and just completely ignore this. So, more of what's possibly coming in the future. We've got a new, can we even call this like a teaser? It seems like.
Okay. It's 8 seconds of music and a slide. Not a slideshow, because that would say that you're transitioning from something to something. No, it's just a slide.
Yeah.
So a couple days ago, BBC themselves decide to put this odd little thing out there that just says Doctor Who Mission Dalek, and they leave nothing else to it. They just say, be ready or be prepared. And it could be a couple of different things. Go ahead and take a look at it, watch it a few times, see if there's some sort of hidden subtext, but it could be related to Doctor and the Dalek, the video game that is out there that they're probably going to be doing a sort of a patch release and adding some content to. It could be a spin-off, but how or why? Or it could just be sort of teeing up some webisode content. That'd be sweet.
No. It's the new spin-off series that's going to follow Rusty the Dalek.
Oh. And Handles.
Oh, Rusty. We need a laugh track. If you say team up with Handles, I'm disconnecting this call right now.
I just said that.
Jesus Christ. I tend to just listen to the parts where I'm talking.
It's a lot more of a show.
I take a nap in the middle. All right. So then another possibility that just, this seems like a huge bit of a stretch, but apparently there's a possibility that Clara is going to be spending some time at Eddie's American Diner.
This was, for those of you who have been to Cardiff, there's right there, like literally just up the stairs from Yanto's shrine are a bunch of little restaurants of the quay. And one is this spot called Eddie's American Diner. And they used it in The Last Astronaut as the place where Dr. Gordon has the first conversation about receiving the blue envelopes and such. It's a great location. They're on very good terms with BBC Wales. And if you go in there, they actually took the back doors back by the restrooms and painted the TARDIS facade on them. The BBC did this as sort of like a parting gift to them, or thanks for letting us shoot in here for however long it took. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's apparently some set photos that showed Clara in looks to me like she's in a waitress uniform, sort of a classic kind of waitress, white apron kind of, and it's set in Eddie's. So they're using the location again. I don't know if it's supposed to represent the same location. If they did... God, I don't really know how they worked that one in. But they might have just redressed it because it's right, literally just two blocks from their primary shooting hangar. Can just redress it as they. But it's all done up, to look like what their impression of a classic. I mean,
please tell me you actually went and had lunch there while you were in the UK. Because that would be funny as hell.
I think we did grab a burger there. At one point.
So you went across the ocean to the UK to have lunch.
To see what they would do with it. Yeah, we wanted to get the impression of what do they take away as an American burger. And
how was
I'm
it?
Not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything because they're lovely people.
And
they run a fantastic
establishment. She had a great personality.
But there is a hamburger shop two doors down that was phenomenal. Like to the point where I was taking photographs of the menu to recreate. That's all I'm saying.
I'm hungry.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got one more bit of news here.
I save this for you, Jay, because this is right up your alley.
Okay. So apparently Tom Baker had decided to start talking about some stuff and said that he's actually doing a voice for some Star Wars production.
Yeah, the way he phrased it, though, I'm going to be in this new Star Wars thing, You just see it as he's signing autographs. So he's sitting at some convention, because he does actually still attend conventions in the UK. He just doesn't want to travel outside of his kind of home territory. Mm. And he's sitting there, and he's probably got cameras and microphones and whatnot all trained on him. And he just kind of looks up, did I mention to you? I'm going to be in one of these new Star Wars things, And just goes back to signing.
Then he goes on to say, I'm going down to record some voices for this new character that they've created for me very soon. So this has caused all kinds of an uproar and people thinking that he's going to be in The Force Awakens and all this stuff. And honestly, if you look at the time frame that they work on with this kind of stuff, the fact that he hasn't even started doing it yet, it's probably more along the lines of something for season 3 of Rebels. It's, there's nothing saying that he's going to be in the movies. There's nothing saying anything like it. He'll probably wind up being in one of the animated things.
Right. Yeah, just because the turnaround time required was a lighter. So
yeah. So it's awesome. I can't wait to be sitting there watching something Star Warsy and hear the Fourth Doctor coming out of the face hole of something on the show. Right. Because let's face it, you're gonna hear it. Like the instant that he starts talking, you're gonna know. So yeah. I don't know. I'll be interested. I'm definitely gonna follow this and see how it it starts to shape up, see what kind of information comes along with it. But yeah, I mean, these two of my favorite fandoms colliding, it's fantastic.
But even if it turns out for something like Rebel, I mean we're already tuned into that show.
Oh yeah, so Rebels is absolutely spectacular. So I mean, I'd kind of prefer that he's on there instead of a bit part in one of the movies that you just, you know, blink and you miss it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, look, it brought Billy Dee Williams back up strong.
Yeah.
Showing up on Rebels. So.
And I mean, it's a spectacular show. If you're not watching Rebels yet, just imagine Star Wars meets Firefly. It's perfect.
Yeah, I'll take that.
It's fantastic. But
it's on the list.
It needs to be the list, Haley. Jeez.
I want to finish Clone Wars first.
Okay, maybe that's valid. As long as you're past season one, because that's a rough start.
I'm not yet.
Ugh.
But we're staying keenly focused here on Gallifrey Public Radio, folks. Laser we're like focused. Laser beams. We are aiming towards that target like a stormtrooper. Oh, that explains everything.
We spent the whole podcast talking about a movie that's not related to this show. Leave me alone.
It's directly related.
Some old time like travel week. Thing.
Just like next week when it's all Keanu Reeves all day long.
Whoa.
That is where I put my sonic screwdriver, Ted.
We have to remember. I won't say it this time. I'm saving it.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, this has been episode 148 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, great Scott.
And this is Kier saying, run for it, Martha.
And this is Haley saying, what the hell is a gigawatt?
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye. See.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.